So without further ado, Mr. Michael Palermo.
Thank you, Mr. Scott.
Hello, everyone. My name is Michael Palermo, and I flew in from Phoenix to be here. I'm very excited. And I do want to ask a question, though, because I think it's important to understand the dynamics of the audience, especially for the part that I have right now. How many of you would regard yourselves as web developers or you know how to do web development? Show of hands. So how many of you would not consider yourselves web developers? I'd like to know that, too. I don't care even. Yeah, the question up front. Do you don't know, don't care? Yeah, don't know, don't care. That's fine. Okay, so the vast majority of you said web development. Even for those of you that said, nah, don't know, don't care, it's all right. I think that you might see something interesting in this particular session, so kick back and enjoy. Go ahead and switch over to the screen up front. Wrong one. Let's see. There we go. There's my only slide for this session. That's my Twitter alias. And I would like you to do something. As we're going through this session, if there's something you'd like or something you want to offer feedback on, use that in your Twitter feed, and you're going to see that come back real soon at the end of the session. So I'm going to sit down, and let's start talking about what we're going to do. First of all, you know, sometimes you go to a place like, you know, an event like this, and it's like, we're going to show you how to do this and this, and we're going to see 3D that, and blah, blah, blah. And what I want to do is kind of chill and say, okay, let's just talk about some of the basic structure, and we're going to, and if you'd like to follow along, you can do that with this particular session. I'm going to start from scratch, so to speak. I have some comments in there, but you're going to be able to follow along if you want, because this is what I hope. I don't want to show you a lot of stuff that you don't know. If I do my job correctly, I'm going to show you stuff you already know. And that's going to be the confidence level you're going to have in order to be able to do Windows 8 app development. So this is what I'm talking about. How many of you have Visual Studio? You've used it before. All right, very nice. So you understand a solution is a container that represents, you know, managing all the files. And right now I want to draw attention to a couple things. When I think in terms of doing any kind of web development, I'm thinking HTML, I'm thinking my scripts, and I'm also thinking CSS. Those three components are the basic fundamentals of this session. And I'm going to go in this order: HTML, CSS, JavaScript. Do a very simple type of app, and then I'm going to demo something that was already built. So going into the HTML, I gave myself a little note. Now, this was a blank solution. So if you were following along, you just create a blank, one of the blank project types for HTML, Metro development. Specifically, though, using JavaScript, not the XAML one. And in fact, in order not to have a lot of clutter, I'm going to collapse the header section up here. And this is what I like to do. I want to say, well, I'm going to create kind of like a know-it-all app. You know, something you type in a little question, it's going to provide you an answer. Very easy. But I want to think like a web developer. I don't want to think like an app developer right now. I just want to, you know, chill. So I'm going to say div class equals content. I understand divs, yeah. That's great. I'm feeling comfortable already. Then I can go in and say, oh, I'd like an H1 tag, maybe class equals title. Maybe I'll do something kind of interesting with the title. Create a span, class equals, and I'll say title word. And then I'm going to repeat this three times and have know it all. Okay? Now I'm thinking, okay, I got the title set up. Now, and I'm only worried about content at this point. I don't really care about the styling. That's what I'm going to do when I get to CSS. So what's the content here? Well, I'm going to need to have a question, you know, some kind of prompt for the user. So I'll use a span for that. Class is going to equal, let's say, label. And inside it's a, you know, What is your question? And done there. I'm going to need a place for them to ask the question. So the ID is going to equal question. The type, of course, this is standard input type. So type is going to equal text. One of the things that's nice, though, is if you look at the very first line, it says doctype HTML. That signals to me, hey, I must be in an HTML5 app because I don't see a lot of weirdness up there. So that also lets me know that I have that available here as I'm doing my web development, so to speak, but really app development. And that means I'd have something like autofocus. Where did it go? Autofocus. There we go. I'll close that up. Whoops. IntelliSense is working excellently. And then need a button that we can press. I'm going to give that one an ID of submit question. And say, you know, get answer. And finally, I'm going to need like a div with an ID that equals answer that will represent where all this is going to go. So completely from scratch, you know, no smoke and mirrors. This is just basically some basic HTML content. Nothing should look scary. Just pure HTML so far. Now I'm going to see what it looks like. So Control-Shift-B, warm and fuzzy keyboard shortcut, F5. I know that one too. And I start to get some basics. I'm like, okay, I can see where this is going. And the reason why it looks the way it does is I understand that in the header section, I've got a reference to a CSS that's the dark theme. Okay. Alt F4 closes that app. And hitting the start key again just takes me right back over to Visual Studio. So, okay, that's good. Got the HTML piece down. Now what's up? Now I start to do some styling. So I'm going to go over into my Solution Explorer, double-click the default CSS. Of course, I have these little comments, so in case I have bad memory, which does happen sometimes, draw attention to the know-it-all. So I will. But the first thing I'm going to draw attention to is, remember, I'm trying to tie in some of the previous content. We were hearing Jeremy talking about, well, you must do this, almost like a task-style taskmaster. So I'm like, okay, I better do what he says. So I'm going to create a content class style rule. And what I'd like to do here is add a padding left. Anybody happen to remember where you're supposed to be margin-wise there? I'm starting to hear some really close guesses. I heard units, so that means something, synaptic connections going off. 120px. Padding top. Anyone remember? Well, remember, it was padding top to the baseline of your font. So you'd have to know what your font size is. I happen to know what it is. So I'm just going to put in 44, which the math there means that the remainder would be the font size. Now I'm going to draw attention to this know-it-all title. So dot title, and do something real simple to begin with, like just color. So I got the color. Maybe I'll choose this one right here. So I've done my style rule, starting to think, okay, I want to know what it looks like. Hit F5. Okay. Think, maybe I'll take advantage of that CSS3 style rule that says, go ahead and add a shadow. So I'm going to do that. And I'll go, now you'll notice sometimes when you're going back and forth, when you're running the app and closing it, you might have this delay that occurs. The delay is because it's actually shutting down in the background. Oh man, that's going to be fun going through that again and again and again. So, when you're in this type of mode, I'm going to introduce to you a reason why you might want to use Blend, even if you're not one of those kind who wears a certain kind of shirt. You might be a developer, but you might want to use Blend for this reason. So I'm going to go over to Blend. Open an expression blend. And instead of saying, let me show you how to use all the designer stuff, because that might be frightening and scary to some people. I just want to use it normally. I just want to look at the CSS. So go over here in the CSS. In fact, I'm going to even show you mixed view. If I hit the F11 key, that's going to do a toggle for me. Every time I click F11, I'm just repeating. It's a toggle between split view, source, and design. In this view right now, it's actually giving me the ability to come down here and say, hey, if you want to take a look at this CSS on the page, which I'm saying I do, what if I want to add a text shadow right now? I can say, well, text shadow, and notice I still get the IntelliSense. And what do I want to do? Well, let's see. How about I'll go 8px, which is, you know, how far this way and how far that way, and then 2px, which is the degree of shadow. And do you see it to start to appear immediately? I get instant gratification. And yeah, clap, please. We devs can like that. That means you could just be in this mode, the CSS, and not worry about the fluff of all the UI stuff, and just say, well, I just want instant gratification. So that's good. And I'm looking and going, oh, you know what? I think it's going to hurt my eyes if I keep it that way. So I'll reverse it and just put a 2 here, a 2 here, and an 8 here. And that's going to make it a little bit more glowy. And I'm thinking, good, great. Got that taken care of. But now I want to do something interesting. I want to add the dot title word. And let me zoom in on this so you could see what I'm about to do here. What I'd like to do for title word is say, if I hover over any one of those title words, which I'm going to add the colon hover here in a second, I want to add yet another effect. So I'll close this up, go up to this and say hover. And I'm going to repeat that text shadow, control see this whole line here. So I'm going to show you a little interesting CSS 3 tip trick. If I leave the first two at 0, that means do not go in any direction, but just go out. That's all I'm going to do is just go out. 8px, another 8px, and let's see. Someone shout out a color.
Purple.
Purple, green. What to do? I'll just go with... how about 88FF88? That sounds good. Now, because it's a hover, you know, I'm thinking, how am I going to find out? I'm not seeing it when I hover up here. But you did see earlier today that we can go into interactive mode. And I'm a keyboard shortcut guy. That's Control-Alt-I. So Control-Alt-I, look at that. I'm competing with the next guy, so you got to really do the applauses here. Come on. All right, so I'll Control-Alt-I again, and so now I'm okay, I got enough done with Blend. I'll go back over into Visual Studio and say, you know, save everything I just did. Of course, Visual Studio says, you know, you just modified everything. Sure, I did. Okay, great. So I'm back over here. Now I want to get to the point where I can just add maybe the answer. I want it to stand out. Maybe add just a little bit more to the label. You know, let the width of the label to be... 120px, and I'm going to add the answer rule here. And for the answer, I'd like to add a padding top. You know, and this is all, there's nothing that's been introduced here that is scary. This is just normal web type development. Font size, let's say 100px. And I'll do another one of those text shadows. So text shadow with 0, 44px, 44px, and some interesting color. We'll see what happens when I just do an 88FF. That looks good. And then if I ever did introduce an image one day, maybe what I'd like to do there is just add another thing that would be in CSS 3, and that's a border radius. And I'll make that one like, oh, 64px. Great. So, Control-Shift-V, run the app,
The styling now is getting better, but what we don't have is functionality. So I'm going to switch gears, because if I click on the button, I don't get nothing. So I want something to happen when I click on the button. That's going to take me into JavaScript. Now, the JavaScript story is going to be fun. I want you to know that I could go in the default HTML, and I could write a script block right now and just start doing it all on that page. And that's completely acceptable. But I gave myself a hint up there in the header section that said, hey, do you want to introduce maybe another JavaScript file? Sure. So, by the way, if you didn't know this keyboard shortcut, if you're just on the line of any line, you just hit Control-C and then Control-V. You don't have to highlight everything. Just, you know, copy it. And then I'm going to take script. So I got the script in there. Well, what's in script? I'm excited to see. What is it? It says, get immediate gratification, then be strict. Seems like an oxymoron, but let's try it. So I'm going to create a function. And in that function, let me zoom in on this so you can see it. That is an immediate function. What it means is this. Execute me immediately. However, anything that's declared inside of me is not in the global scope. That's what that means. So if you see that funky looking kind of function, that's what that means. So I'll go in there. And now I want to talk about what it means when you... Maybe you've seen this before when you've seen the use strict. Whoops. Keep doing that. I want you to see what that means. So create a function. I'm going to call it get duped. Copy, comma, copy. So I'm going to zoom in on this. You'll notice that seems wrong. I got two arguments that are the same name. If I now go in here and say, hey, use strict, you can already tell that Visual Studio not happy. So it's enforcing rules. That's why you see that there, if you didn't know. Okay, great. But I don't want a function called get duped. I want one instead that's going to be called get answer. So when I get an answer, the only thing I'm going to pass in for an argument is just going to be a potential event argument, so E. And down inside, I need to extract. Remember, I have elements that are on that HTML page that I want to access. What do you think I'm going to need to know on that HTML page? Question. What else? Answer. It's just that simple. So var q equals, and then I can say document dot query. Whoops. Silly. Query selector. And I want to get the question, so that's going to be hash question. Sorry about that. I think I'm hitting this trackpad on this too much. So Control-C, Control-V, and then I can also get the answer right here and put answer. So with those two things there, the reason why I have this here is because I want to be able to access those elements, and then I want to, you know, process the question. And maybe I'll pass in the Q and the A to this function. What function? Well, the one I'm about to write. So, function, process question, QA. And now I can start to write my dizzying business logic. My dizzying business logic is going to be this for now. The most important thing to do, what I'm going to do is, no matter what the question is, I'm just going to set an answer. So a dot text content equals the answer to all things, which would either be 40, what?
42.
Let's just do 42. Let's do it. So I got 42 there. And would I be done? Does something seem wrong? Think web developer. Is anything connected to any of this yet? The button, someone says. Yes, correct synaptic connection. So we need to connect to that button. But the thing is that what I just said is anything I declare in this function is not made available. Unless I do something like this. winjs.namespace.define. And then I can provide a name. The name of this project happens to be blank script. It would be bad for me to do something like this because, well, it kind of looks like that. So I need to just draw it out and say script. And I'm going to open up a JSON format and say get answer colon get answer. What that means is I'm exposing that function and only that function. Now that I've done that, I can go back over to my HTML, find that button right here, and say, okay, here's the story with you. Now, I could have done this in script as well, but I'm just doing it kind of the easy way. OnClick equals blank, what did I call it? Blank script? Yeah. Blank script dot get answer. See what happens. What is life all about? Get the answer. 42. Woo! Okay. Well, let's kind of figure out what's going on behind the scenes. In fact, I'm going to go over into the script and highlight a very key point here, and that is maybe I want to know what's going on with Q&A. So I'm going to set a breakpoint right there. Debug, which is just F5, and say, what is your question? Who dat? Get the answer. Now it stopped right away. If I hover over Q, it's going to show me the contents of what it is. Same with A. Notice I have the pinning effect that we had in the previous versions where I can pin that and keep that alive. I also have something else that I think is really cool. And that is the ability for me to, in fact, I'm going to get out of this full screen and go into the DOM Explorer. This is a live rendered version of that HTML. It's a cool way for you to understand, especially if you put dynamic content in there. What do you mean by dynamic content, you may say? Let me demonstrate. I'm going to stop this. And I'm going to do something, just make a slight change. App dot process question. What would that suggest to you, that I just put app dot? Any guesses? See, I snuck something in there and you didn't know about it. Let's see what happens. I'm no longer calling my process question, I'm calling yet another one. So let's see, what is your question? Cool Twitter feed or Twitter hash. Get the answer. It's so true. So true. My boss says he's always at meetings. What kind of meetings is boss at? Let's see what the answer is. I knew it! So what I did is I also demonstrated that you can treat your JavaScript with various APIs. What do I mean by APIs? When you do that namespace.define, what you're doing is you're creating a separate API call. I stuck one in. I was being deceitful with you. Because I said, oh, this is just a blank project, and it was for the most part, but I did have to sneak something in the default JS where what I'm doing is a match on boss. And basically, if I just have the word boss, no matter what the question is, you know, shows picture. So I could have had a lot of fun, but then again, I want a job. So I'm going to go ahead and leave it at that. Now I have two projects in here. The next project is the tweet screen. So I'm going to say set as a startup project. I'm going to go ahead and run that. And this is your opportunity for revenge if you'd like to. Because if you're going to tweet anything, I'm even seeing questions live, and it was so fast I didn't get to see it. But this was what was running during lunch. And you know, I wanted to let you know the story behind this, and I hope it's an inspiration to you. Think about this. I was on a conference call with my boss and the team, and he's like, well, we need to have this. We need to have an app. Go find an app that does some kind of a revolving Twitter thing. And I thought to myself, well, why can't we just write an app for that? I said, I'll write an app for that. Okay, Mike, go ahead. So it took me under a day to do it, and I had never even seen a Twitter API before. I just applied the same kind of thinking that I just went through with you. I'm like, I'll just think of it as a web thing. It's just a web thing. I'm not going to worry about app this, or try to tie in the web camera. Who cares? I just want to do a simple thing. So that's what I'd like to encourage you to think about. Don't try to think you have to solve the world's problems with an app at this moment. If you want to get started with this, think of something simple. Think of something that you would have fun doing. Maybe even this afternoon or this evening. I encourage you to come back because this is what my firm belief is. I hope to be part of this. I want to be the next Facebook or Twitter or the next big app. There could be someone in here right now that is one of those persons. It could be you. If it's not me, I want to at least know you. I want to be part of that experience. Don't let anything hinder you from this opportunity. My boss was talking about, oh, this is the greatest thing. He's right. It's an amazing opportunity. This is your time to get involved. This is the time to get... I've always asked, I want to have a natural advantage in life. This is that advantage. And you're here. Take advantage of it. So if you're going to be here later on, I'm going to be roaming the code pit myself. If you have questions, I'd like to help you out with it. If you have questions about things like, snapping. So, you know, what if I want this on the side and I can't see their name if it goes off, so I want it to slant a little bit, right? What are the keyboard shortcuts for this or that? Or how do you do some other things? How did you get the Twitter feed to work? That's what this is all about. So I'm going to go ahead and stop there. And hopefully, if you enjoyed this session, please continue to put some feedback up there. And without any further delay, I'm going to bring out the next guy. And you can boo. It's okay if you want to. But I'm going to go ahead and leave this. I'm sorry. I'm so cold-hearted. That's true. But anyway, was that good?
All right.
All right. Any last words?
Well, I have to say your impression of Scott is awesome. That's great. Let me ask you. So I'm looking at it. It makes a lot of sense to me. It looks really powerful. Seems like JavaScript developers have a first-class opportunity to make applications. And it's all, I assume it's all running... an Internet Explorer?
So, I know I said web stuff, and I wanted you to feel warm and fuzzy and comfortable with web technologies, but make no mistake about it. When I'm running it, it's an app. And there's nothing like, is there an ActiveX control that's rendering that in a browser? No! There's no browser!
ActiveX control or something that it's
so
running?
So, I'm out of here. You guys listen to him now. See ya.
Thanks, Michael. Well, I want to preface with a couple things really quickly before I say anything. First of all, for the web developers in the audience, I'm totally on board and respect you totally, okay? For Michael, similar, respect. But it's time to get into some real development here, and there may not be any JavaScript involved. So, I'm only kidding, right? I'm 100% kidding. Because remember that slide, that WinRT slide that kind of went through and said, hey, don't forget, WinRT is projected into every language identically. So, you don't really make a compromise. But you pick the language based on what you know and what you like and what you may have assets that you've already invested in, where your staffing might be today. And so, for me, if it was my company, like Microsoft is, I would choose C# because I've been a C# developer for years and years and years. And I would choose XAML because I've been, if you can say XAML developer, I've been a XAML developer for years and years as well. And I totally dig XAML, totally dig C#. So let's build some applications in C# so you can see what the experience is like. We can go through, I want to talk kind of realistically too. You know, a Metro app's a big deal. There's a lot to cover. If you were going to do a really good Metro app, the likelihood of you building it in 45 minutes is like minusculely small, right? You could do Hello World in 45 minutes and probably get it through certification and store. I hadn't thought about that. And then I guess you could have the first Metro Hello World. Wow. I got everybody's app idea for after dinner. All right, so hadn't thought about that. That's exciting. I'm going to let me launch up a couple slides to walk through because I want to kind of bookend today and talk about some things that developers can really that developers should take away. It doesn't matter if you're a C# developer or if you're a JavaScript developer or if you're a C++ developer. All those things. There's a lot of principles that I want to just make sure that we reiterate and talk about. So I'm going to talk specifically about XAML, but it doesn't have to be that way. And I think the key thing is, because all these different languages are projected up the same, you already have the skills that you need to build applications, right? Windows Metro applications, they meet you where the language is that you start at, and they give you the same power so you don't have to compromise between language choice. I think that's an important takeaway for developers so they don't feel like they're pinched into a certain paradigm that they may or may not know. Because even when Michael was talking, I mean, a JavaScript application executes as a real application, not as an application showing in a browser. Somebody during the break asked me, can I take my JavaScript application and put it in a browser and just run it from there? You know, I mean, how much change would I have? And you'd have a lot, right? Because we're totally talking about two different things. We're talking about running in Windows Metro, and we're talking about running in a browser. It's totally different worlds. We're just talking about using the same technologies to accomplish these tasks. And so, anyway, there we are. One of the things I think is worth going back to is what Jeremy said. And so Jeremy talked about the design principles. And when you do build an application, it's exciting. I mean, when we go to the labs and hacking around after dinner, it'll be exciting, and we'll have 2 hours to like just plow into it and go to town, right? And a lot of you will have cool ideas that we'll start seeing, like the nascent things coming together. Also, a lot of you will have questions that we'll be roaming around and proctoring the labs to make sure that you get your answers as much as we can. And if your questions aren't answered, then we'll find the answer for you, because as much as we might know, we certainly don't know everything, but what we do know is where to find all these answers. So one way or another, we can help you out. Questions that don't have answers, like the meaning of life and things like that, that's totally up to JavaScript applications to get for that. So that's not what after dinner, if you're coming back after dinner for that, then don't think about that. The other thing to remember is application lifecycle. Remember, any Metro application that's not on top is asleep, totally suspended, doesn't have execution, and you need to be able to handle that, because when it does go behind the active application, there's another possibility that yet another application comes up, and yet another, and another, and another, and now you're many layers down, and the operating system may, because of resources or other reasons that are outside of your control, may actually terminate your application. So you can't assume that just because you've been suspended, someday you'll be resumed, because it could be that you'll just be totally terminated as well. So that's important, because there's a couple of strategies you have to employ. One of them will be that you have to, one of them will be that when you go into suspend, you want to store everything you can as fast as you can, which is a big deal because you only have 10 seconds. And then if you don't get it done in 10 seconds, it doesn't matter, right? The operating system kicks in and it's over for you. All your threads are suspended, and from that point forward, there's nothing you can do. So that means the strategy that you need to employ is saving a little along the way, right? Let's pretend you have a 4-page form, and the user's going through it, and they're on the 3rd page. Certainly do not wait for the 4th page to save, right? Just go from page to page, even field to field, right? It's not a big deal. And so just make sure that as the user, just assume that suspend can be done at any time. And so even as you go through testing and you have use cases, it's a great variation on your use case to go step to step and then just suddenly suspend. Because when you suddenly suspend, you get yet another opportunity to see it break, right? Because the user will come back and they'll be, and if their experiences start from scratch, that's a negative experience. And I always say this, I talk a lot about Windows Phone development too, and I would say application development is a cosmic battle of you versus the uninstall button. Right? I mean, that's really what it is. And so, as soon as your application is annoying, end of story, right? And that's the way it goes. And so, granted, for you developers who are inside the enterprise building application, line of business applications, you can totally screw the user all you want and they can't uninstall it. But for the rest of us, it's totally different, right? The rest of us are trying to make our millions of dollars like MJ so we can still work for Microsoft, right? That's going to be great. The orientation in Snap is important. Don't forget, that's a requirement. It's not an option. It's a requirement to get through certification. It's also a requirement just to make your application nice so that when they do Snap, it reorients properly. A lot of the controls that are built into the operating system that you get natively handle a lot of this for you and really give you a head start. So in snapping and all the touch gestures and keyboard gestures and I guess you would do keyboard shortcuts, all those pieces are built in. So when I use a grid view, so I'm a XAML guy, right? And so if you're an HTML JavaScript developer and you're making that sort of a Metro application, you'll use the list view, that box that you know you scroll from side to side. If you're doing XAML like I am, you'll use the grid view. And so we still have list views, but they're used for other things. The list view is a vertical scrolling component, and there are controls that we already had, frankly, in XAML, and so we just need some new names. Grid view is that side-to-side scroller, and it gives you a lot of that functionality built in. One of them, for example, not just keyboard gestures and all those things that are already handled for you, but that scrolling is really fast. And I don't know if you've gone over to the bar and you've tried, especially on the slates, because they're just fantastic, and gone to the slates and go as fast as you can because it's a lot of fun, because that's all hardware accelerated, and you get that out of the box. It's all built in for you, even on the JavaScript side. So everything is hardware accelerated, so your performance or the user's performance is really excellent, even if you've never built any of that into your application anyway. Those controls handle it for you. All the animations that allow that to happen, by the way, are all rolled down into WinRT. And so you can use WinRT and other controls that you might make as well and get the same advantages. Transition animations and motion animations are all there. So you can go through the library of them and apply them very simply, actually. And when you do, you get all the hardware acceleration and you get a similarity to the way the operating system works as well. And remember, that's an important theme in Windows 8, is consistency, right? You want consistency in your app so that it feels like, so the user knows what they're doing. So it feels like part of the operating system, perhaps, as well. You don't want them to come in and have a brand new paradigm because your application is ridiculously different, right? That's not the idea. Be innovative, be differentiated, but at the same time, have consistency from app to app. Don't forget, roam to the cloud. And use WinRT specifically. So WinRT, just as a reminder, is the way all applications access it. I'm going to access it as well using C#. I don't use VB, but a VB would have the same experience. Remember, because I'm using a managed language, excuse me if you're sitting down, as I use a managed language, I have access not only to XAML, but I also have access to the .NET framework. A couple other questions I was getting during the break was whether or not the .NET framework is there, like it is, say, on Windows Phone. And it totally is, right? And there are going to be changes in the .NET framework because some of the things have been brought out of it and moved into WinRT so that they can be provisioned across all the different languages, right? So an example would be like system.io file is not in the .NET framework now, so it's down in WinRT by a different name. And that allows me to use it in every language the same, right? So that's important. When you do use WinRT inside the .NET framework, it's very clean, feels like I'm using the when I am using C# and WinRT, it feels like I'm using the .NET framework. Right? It looks like just a series of namespaces that I'm accessing. Now remember, most of the WinRT is going to be asynchronous. Inside C# 4.5, the async keyword is kicked in, as well as await as its partner. And that's important. If you haven't gotten to know the async keyword in C#, it's worth taking however long it takes you to learn it, right? Maybe it's 30 minutes, maybe it's an hour, however long, maybe it's a day, maybe it's a week, maybe it's not worth learning. But, no, it totally is, but maybe you've got the wrong language. You haven't, right? C# is the right language, right? Come on. Let's do something fun. Before I even get started, I have an application that I want to show you, and got charms and a lot of, here we go. All right, let me go in and, run a quick app that I've got. Well, all right, I'm going to switch over to this machine where it's installed. Da 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 da. Da da da. Bam. Well, that's not the one. Know it all. Oh, that's funny. Let me just look for it real quick. Oh, there it is. The excellent name of Metro app. Can everybody see this? So this is my audience participation app, right? This is my, I love this app. And so the audience participation app allows me to manage sessions and manage questions during those sessions. So here's an example of a question that I asked. And it's totally sample, right? Because it says answer one, answer two. And this is how the answers have pulled out. So how many people here have a cell phone? Just be honest. How many people have a cell phone? Okay, wait a minute. How many people here have a cell phone? Somebody doesn't have a cell phone? I'm not going to point. But it's the guy in the shirt right there. Okay, so, all right, let me see your cell phone, please. Because this is worthwhile, right? Because isn't it in the back of your mind? You're like, well, how many JavaScript, how many C# developers are there? So this is why I love this application. So I'm going to back, you have your cells, right? All right, great. Now go ahead and take off the lock screen. Go to your SMS client. I'm going to back up. I'm going to go to the WinAnchor here. I'm going to say, what is your language? All right. So you ready? All right, I'm going to open up the question. And so there's the phone number, 303-647-4390. Now don't text anything except the letter. Right? It'll be rejected if you don't. So it's just A, B, C, and then D is C++. It doesn't matter. Uppercase for the JavaScript developer. All right, so that, it's cool, right? It'll be kind of live. Don't vote twice. It'll reject it, so there's no reason to do it. I mean, you could change it, I guess, if you're just excited to see how it all changes out. But it's kind of cool to see how it plays out and see who's using what. You're the pink one, I'm sure. Keep them coming. If you haven't done it, go ahead, come on. I'm going to close the question so everything will be rejected here in just a second. Wow, look, everybody has done a fantastic job. I'm just proud of that. All right, great. All right, that's cool. That's very cool. All right, I'm closing it, so there's no reason to keep going. This is a fun app, right? I mean, it really is fun to do, too. Hey, that's great. A lot of C# developers here. I think I'm speaking to a lot of you. I think a few of you may not have voted based on 78, but that's okay. You know, we don't all have to play along. I'm going to guess it was mostly the JavaScript guys who didn't do it, right, based on the turnout. It's all right. Okay, so that was fun just to see. I was curious. Weren't you all kind of curious? Think of all the things we could ask there, right? I got some great questions lined up, too. So, all right, I'm going to drop out of slides. Slides are exciting, but not what we need today. And so I'm going to pop open, and I'm going to say File, New, Project. And I'm going to switch to, I'm already in C#, which is where I'd want to be. And so similar to JavaScript developers, when I say File, New, Project, I get the same new file dialog, and I have the same templates waiting for me. And the templates are great, right? They're a great way for you to get started. So if I were to let's go into the grid application real quick together. And so I'll just double click it so I can create a new one really quickly. And, over here I want to expand the Solution Explorer. Just a quick raise of hands, which seems old school now after seeing an app that awesome, really? All right. Just a quick raise of hands. How many people have never seen Visual Studio until today? I mean, honestly, I'm kind of curious. All right. It's close. It's zero except for the really shy guy. And so how many people have never seen Visual Studio 11 here for Metro until today? Yeah, a bunch. Yeah, that's normal, right? And so the first thing we've done is we've totally colorized Visual Studio 11. Not at all. I don't know how to, I guess I said that backwards, right? But I can switch to the theme. A lot of people really like a black on white or a white on black theme. You know, it's a lot of people think that their eyes relax a lot more with that theme. That's totally cool. It's not for me, but that doesn't matter. So it's really easy to switch back and forth with black and white glyphs so that the icons switch back and forth real easily. Same experience. Anyways, but there's so many cool things in Visual Studio 11. I mean, this is not the Visual Studio 11 session, so I can't go like show you everything because there's just no time, right? It's so neat, especially all of the changes in team foundations. How many people use TFS as their lifecycle management, or yeah, ALM? Yeah, everybody. That's great, 100%. So, I mean, you know what it's like. It is awesome, right? It's not just source control, right? It's ALM and it's task management and la, la, la. It really is cool. And we've been seeing the preview up in the cloud. It's going to be great. Anyway, the integration with Visual Studio 11 and TFS is really just knock them out. I mean, it's cool. I mean, it's like coolness. All right, so let's look at where we are. So on the right, your right, my left, so it's a little bizarre, is the Solution Explorer. That's the stuff that comes out of the box when I selected that that template. And so let's look and see what's in it. So the first thing I have is an assets folder. And let's see. What's the keystroke for Zoomit? God, that Windows plus one always gets me because you gotta close that little magnet. What's the Zoomit key press? What is it? Control. Ah, it's so easy. Yeah, I guess it's not installed. So that was all that. I'll use the Windows plus one. All right, I want you to see it. Okay, right, it's worth it. And so in the assets folder is where my icon is. It's where my splash screen is. Your splash screen inside Metro is a static image. So if you want an animated splash screen, there's a couple things to do. One, make your startup really, really fast, right? And so you should do that anyway, but also make the first screen then that follows the flash screen look identical, or splash screen, look identical. And then from that point forward, you can have it animated so that you do other things that are beyond the initial startup. Right, so that's really common. So if you see a startup and it's animated, just know they've done a great job of making their startup fast, and then they have a secondary startup with that animated screen. Anyway, all that business is inside assets, and then we get the common folder. And the common folder, now this is specific to our managed application here, right? So the first thing we get is bindable base. Bindable base is the base to our models, right? So this is MVVM, model view, view model. And so our models in XAML, in order to bind correctly, need to implement what interface? I notify free Xbox to the guy with the hair. Yeah. Let's see, who was it to? Just everybody can have one. That's right. Talk to Scott. That'll get you. Let's see, it'd be like the grand champion of Wacka Scott gets to win. That'd be great. Great. So I notify property changes required for binding to work properly in XAML, right? And so we've all built bases to our models so that our models work the way we want them to be. Bindable base is that reusable base that just comes out of the box with the template. Pretty handy. You might build your own. One cool thing inside it, we have, I don't want to go too deep because it's that late in the day. But the reality is the bindable base is really neat, and there's a line of code in there that every C-sharp developer is going to find as Nirvana. But I'm not going to show it to you. You're going to have to try it on your own. And then you're going to wonder which one it is. Everybody's going to have their own opinion. It's going to be Nirvana heaven. It's going to be great. All right, so we have a few converters that are there to get you started. You're probably going to build a library of your own converters in order to do one or two-way conversions. Then we have layout aware page, which is a custom page base. Now, when you build a Metro application in XAML, it's going to be the navigation framework, which means I have a frame, and inside that I have a page similar to a browser. Every page then I navigate through. That way I can go back real easily. And so each of those pages inherits page, of course, which is handy. However, layout aware page, it implements a lot of the stuff around snapping and orientation change for you. So that if you implement, or if you inherit, instead of page, you inherit layout aware page, it allows you to handle all that stuff really easily. You might want to build all this soup to nuts on your own. You might want to use what comes in it, because even when I go into the blank template, this still comes for free. So what is layout aware page? It's a replacement to the page base. And of course, it inherits page too, right? Yeah, it does. Okay, so now I'm in standard styles. Standard styles is a XAML page. Think of it, for you web developers who are looking at this in Envy, just know that this is kind of like your CSS file, so very similar to how CSS can style things to make them look really cool. You can change classes on the fly, exactly the way that we do styles in XAML as well. We create a style, we can base them on other styles so that they cascade, and then we can set them at a higher level or a lower level. We set up the higher level and all the controls can inherit them, or set them individually like an inline style would. Pretty cool. Anyway, standard styles is my XAML page. It's loaded with stuff to get you started. You may take this back to cold metal and just put your own styles in there, or you might use exactly what's in there, and a lot of tricks. Because a lot of the fonts, for example, Segoe, S-E-G-O-E is our font. Anybody know how to pronounce it? I just said it, so I kind of killed it, right? So Segoe is our font, and Segoe symbol has tons and tons of cool glyphs in it. And they're exposed through standard styles, and they can show you how to do that. So you can have buttons with images in them without having an image in your application. It's really nice. There's a handful of 100 in there. It's really nice. Okay, so then we go down to data model, and the data model folder allows me to implement model view view model. Everything up here so far has just been common. So if I did have models, right, like a user class or a something else class, it would be in my data model folder. I want to just point out that this is based on convention. If you don't do it this way, the world won't stop. This is a convention so that, like, the user has a similar experience as they go from the application to application to application. Why not have the developer have, under the line, have the same experience as they go from application to application, though there's a similarity in its architecture? Yeah. And then we have AppSAML like you would... Well, let me just open that up real quick so I can show you something. In fact, I'm going to back out of the Zoom for a second, which is still not too bad, right? I mean, it's not bad. But I want to show you something right here. So this is sample data source. And when I selected sample data source, I didn't double-click it. Back on Visual Studio and how groovy it is. So I selected it, and look, it opened it up for me so I could see it. Don't be impressed yet. But look, the tab is on the right. Don't be impressed yet. That is a transient tab that doesn't clutter my tab well, right? And so as I go from file to file, let me go to another CS file. And see, as I go from different code file to code file, it switches between them and doesn't keep adding tabs and cluttering just because I want to find them. This is especially handy, like in search and when I'm searching between files, and all of a sudden I've got 85 things closed. And if you're like me, you just close everything and start over because it's just confusing. Or you use the close all but this, right? And then you go open the other 12 that you wish you hadn't closed. And then you're lost, right? You're like, oh, I had that one file open, right? And then you're in a big solution with a handful of projects. And you're like, this totally sucks. But here comes Visual Studio 11 to the rescue. Very cool. So let me just show you one other neat thing. So I'm going to go open up sample data source, and I want to show you how awful this file is. Never put multiple classes in one file, right? Isn't there some sort of, like, I don't know, rule of thumb of the universe that says don't do that? Anyway, here it is, and the guy who wrote this file is watching. And I want to apologize because it's not an awful file at all. It's a sample, right? And samples are meant to guide. That's awful, too. I'm sorry. All right, so anyway, inside sample data, it gives us our view model. The first thing it gives is a common base for all the models. There's two different types of models in the sample data. You know how it's just got the squares, right? I mean, here, let me run it real fast so you can see. It's just got the squares. It's exactly the same as the JavaScript guys had, so let me kill it. And so here I am, I'm back over here, and as I navigate from each to the other, not only does it keep the file open, but it's also moving from class to class inside the file for me as well. And even cooler, I can expand it down and I can see the individual methods, properties, and fields that are inside that class. So this is nice. It's a lot like our... It's similar to the Object Explorer. What was the other little pane? The something view. Class Explorer. Class View? Maybe it's called Class View? Woo! Bam! Sorry. Right! It's like the Class View mixed in with the Solution Explorer, and even cooler. All right, let me just show you. So this is my item groups, right? So this is a property called item groups. So let me back out, which, by the way, I was going to back out and close everything because it was getting kind of cluttered, but I've got this nice little close all, which is really nice, collapses it all up. That used to be an add-in, and I would always add it in every time I would ever open up Visual Studio, but now, native, where did it go? Yeah. All right, so what was the name of that method, that property we're going to find? I can't even remember. Was it grouped items? Item groups? Item Doesn't matter. I've got search right here. So let's go find it. We know it has item in it, right? So what's beautiful is I can search inside the Solution Explorer and find not only the files that are in there, but I can also find down into the files the classes, methods, and everything else based on their symbolic name, which is great, right? Because now I've got this big solution and all these projects, and I can't find my item groups anywhere because I can't remember what file I put it in because all the developers I work with are just following the direction of the sample and putting everything in one file, right? And so I'm like, how am I going to find this stuff? So I just type ITEM, right? And now everything that has item is right there. And that's not enough. It's going to be items group, group items. I really am struggling here because I didn't pay attention to what it was called. G-R-O-U-P-I, group item. God, come on, people. Help me out. Items, plural, grouped items. I knew I'd find it. Of course, it's grouped items. There it is. All right. So inside grouped items is, okay, so that's what I was looking for. This is really valuable, right? How would you do this otherwise? How would you do this in Visual Studio 2010? You'd have to do like a find in file. It's not a symbolic search. Maybe you do a control comma, right? A huge, valuable feature that was in 2010 that nobody ever used, right? I mean, really, really valuable. I mean, I always hit it with the wrong key, so it made me start to hate it. But this is the way you'd find things by their symbolic name. So there's a lot of value. Anyway, so now it's all built in right to the Solution Explorer. I don't have to go to separate modal windows, and I can find it all based on the application that I'm in. I don't have to have separate file results or anything like that. I love Visual Studio 11 is going to really warm on you. I mean, you're going to really like it, right? I mean, just like, you know what I mean, right? All right, so let me open up a blank project. So we've kind of looked at the basic files here. So I'm going to say Metro-style application, blank application. I'm going to start dropping stuff in really fast, just some sample code so we can see how quick it is to build some really cool functionality. I'm not going to build an app in front of you. It's not realistic. But I'm going to show you some cool XAML. Because some of the things in XAML are just awesome. I mean, let's just admit it. I mean, if you've done XAML development, you know the power at your fingertips. One of the things inside XAML is we all know, if you're XAML developers, that we can do it in Visual Studio. But, it nags in the back of your mind. We really should be using Blend, because Blend is probably cooler, but it's kind of got that barrier of entry. It doesn't look just like Visual Studio. And so it's hard. But once you get past it, you realize applications built in Blend actually look better. Because there are a lot of things that, yes, we can do it in Visual Studio and just kind of, it's kind of like open a Notepad to do the development. You can do it. But there's just a lot of value in Blend, especially around things like animations. So I can use Blend to create animations, and as a result, if I see an application built purely in Visual Studio and I see an application that used Blend, I can visually, usually, tell them apart. Right? I could say, this is probably done in concert with Blend. Right? It's just reality. Not that they both aren't excellent applications, but there's just something to it. Okay, so here I am. I'm in Visual Studio. But one benefit I have is the designer, and I want to just make this one quick point. The designer for XAML in Visual Studio is the designer from Blend, right? So the Blend designer and the Visual Studio designer are a single component used in two places. That's really important because we've always had kind of a little bit of a handicap in Visual Studio because the designer's not quite as powerful as the one in Blend. So those days are over. But also the document outline has come over. Also the new properties dialog has come over. And so there's a lot of really cool things that we get to benefit from just by being in Visual Studio and not opening Blend. Blend for XAML, by the way, is in the consumer preview. And it's a preview status, not a beta status. So definitely go in and check it out, but don't use it for your development because you won't have the experience that you will when it finally releases, right? The stability and things that just aren't there yet. Okay, so I've got a blank here. I've got a blank page. If I were to run this, it would just be a big black screen. I'm going to go to the code behind. I only have one page, but I will point out common is still there, all the stuff that was in common before. And assets is still there. All the stuff that was in assets is before is there as well, my logo and stuff like that. And so I'm going to go into the blank page, which is right above my AppX manifest, right? So every application has AppX manifest. That's where you, the developer, ask permission to do stuff. Right, so let me open it just real quick and show you. So I can go into capabilities here and see I have access to the document libraries. I have access to the microphone. I have access to their pictures. I have access to their, at the bottom, I can access their webcam, their text messages. All these things you can use in your application fine as long as the user gives you permission. And so this is where you go in and ask permission, basically. It's during installation they grant it. Sometimes it's before first invocation. So, for example, when you first use the camera, they'll say, "You sure you want to use the camera?" Okay, so I'm going to open up blank, and let's just start doing some quick samples so it's a lot of fun here. All right, so first thing is what we all do. I'm just going to delete all the comments. All right, because our code is self-documenting, so there's no issue around comments, right? I mean, ours is. I don't know about theirs. And, yeah. All right, so because samples taught me to put classes in the same file, I'm going to do that. I know, you would never really do that, right? All right, so anyway, so I'm going to throw in some things here. So I'm going to create a quick model just to hold some data, and then I'm going to create a quick view model that throws in some fake data, and we can go from there. So I've got them sitting here in my toolbox as a little snippet. But look, they aren't there. Yeah, don't you worry. I've got them right here. That's pretty funny, though, isn't it? Like ha-ha funny? No. Actually, not quite. All right, so let me go grab this class right here. All right, oops. There we go. Do a quick paste. So I just want to apologize because code that you copy-paste during a demo is like totally cheating, right? I mean, it's kind of like saying, look how easy this is. And they just dragged in 500 files, right? I just dragged and dropped, copy-paste, you know, I'm done, right? You could do the same thing in your app, right? It's so misleading. But you don't want to watch me type either. I mean, that's just not right. So I'm going to go in. Observable collection isn't up my using, so I'll add that real quickly. And so now I have my model. Has a name and a bunch of cities. I mean, that's the entire model, just a name and a child collection of cities. And here's my view model where I create... a whole bunch of names, they're all going to be countries, and then a whole bunch of cities inside those countries. That's it. All right, so now I've got my data. That's great. I'm going to go up here to my, I'll say this.dataContext equals new my view model dot items. Okay, so now I've set, remember, in XAML we have dependency properties, so everything hierarchically cascades. And so I'll set it at the top. Now from this point forward, everything has the data context of all the items. So now I can go into XAML and just do all my stuff and not worry about this. This is just sample data, by the way. And you know it's sample data. I don't have to say anything else, right? You're not going to hold me to it. All right, so now I'm going to go over to the XAML where we'll spend the rest of our time. Did I already tell you that the designer is the blend designer? How cool is that? All right, now let's do all the, whoever that was, mom, was appreciated. Thank you. All right, so, I'm going to drop down, grab a little bit of this snippet. All right, so this is a lot. But just know, these are just templates to make things look right. You can make the templates look however you want. I'm going to drop in a whole slew of templates. Don't freak out. It's going to look like absolute cheating, and in a sense, I know it is. All right, so I just dropped them in. Look at them all. They just go on forever. All right, try not to look. Look how little code that is. Right? I mean, it's almost nothing. I mean, it's trivial. All right, so of course, in order to manipulate and use data properly inside XAML on the UI side, I'm going to use a collection view source. Collection view source lets me group, collection view source lets me filter, collection view source lets me sort, and do all kinds of stuff right in the XAML without having to get C# involved, which is really nice, right? So a collection view source, if you haven't used it in your application so far, use it now, right? It's fantastic. It's changed a little bit in its WinRT implementation, but not that much. All right, so you can see here, you can see two things. First, the source is set to the binding. Remember, we set the binding already at the highest level, so I can just go jam whatever the default binding is now from this point forward. But I also set D colon. D colon is the design time attribute that allows me to do anything I want, and it only happens at design time. When I run it, it's all ignored. So D is really the ignorable namespace. And so in there, I say, go and use a design instance. A design instance is powerful because it allows me to create a design time instance. It runs the constructor. It adds all the items to my sample data. And then in my designer, I have the full fidelity of what I would want. I can see all the data that it's going to give me. That's pretty useful because you would reference, obviously, you would have a fake view model and a real view model. And the fake view model you would reference here, and it would go and get all your fake data for design time. And you'd have a real view model that you would reference in the code behind that you would set to the data context. right? It gives you a totally different experience, but it allows you to see the impact of the changes you make. All right, so this is called My View. I just want to point that out, and I'm going to close up the resources so we can talk about the grid view. Now, I'm going to do this nice and quickly so you can see it and not feel like it's overwhelming in any way. So let me go first to a nice, simple grid view. This grid view, I'll run this right now. It goes ahead and goes to the binding. It totally skips the view, right? It totally skips the collection view source. It goes directly to the items raw, and all it shows is a repeating list. So let me just show you. I'll just hit F5. It'll launch it locally, and they're there. So there, I only show two things. I only show the name of the country, and I don't show any of the children. Don't do any hierarchical business right here. And I just say a count of how many cities I have in the list, which is pretty arbitrary. I just did this. I used Wikipedia. I probably spelled half of them wrong. So that's not. This is just fake data, right? And these aren't even real countries. The All right, so that's a simple grid. All right, so I'm going to create another grid now. Let's do it with the hierarchical data. Hierarchical data, which is awesome to say out loud. And all right, so I'm going to dial down a little bit so you can see. Okay, so I have the normal grid. All it does is goes and gets the items from that resource above, right? So you don't need to see that on how to do a grid. What you do need to see is all I had to do is add this one. This is, by the way, almost identical except for it points to the view source instead of the default binding. Almost identical except for I've added group style that says this is what you're going to do whenever you find hierarchical data, and that's what we assume you're going to have. And so now I handle and I pass in all the templates to show hierarchical data. Now, this is great. You know, this is the way the items control, which is the base of all repeaters inside XAML, is. So the items control works the same way, and so does list view, so does grid view, and all the pieces that inherit from items control. And all right, so that's my only change. If I were to run that, you could see it's a little bit different. Right, so there we go. So now I show every single. Look, I can do either way. See, I can see. You see how this fidelity is like? I can do it with my mouse rolling left and right. Very nice. Or I can use my finger and scroll. That's really great. All right, sorry, that's like totally not worth it. All right. So two different ways. I can handle the hierarchy and I can not. So remember, the start menu looks like this, and you can do this cool thing where you kind of pinch down, and then you can pinch up and zoom back in. So that's our semantic zoom, extremely groovy. I can't imagine an application that, if you leave today and write an application without semantic zoom, I'll be so disappointed. Right? Don't even show me your app. I don't want it, right? I don't want it. There's no reason for you to do a profit share with me on your app. Because I like working at Microsoft. And don't tempt me. All right, so here we go. I'm going to back out of this. Wham! That work at Microsoft thing never gets old. I mean, that's just really, we didn't plan that, I promise. All right, so I'm going to kill this grid view. And so now I'm going to take the grid view from, both of them. I'm going to take the first one, then I'm going to take the second one, I'm going to wrap them inside a semantic view, or semantic zoom. So look how straightforward a semantic zoom is. So let me zoom semantically in. No, that would be optically. And I'll say semantic zoom, semantic zoom. Done. Not totally, but I mean, I'm done with that part. And then you say semantic zoom dot. And then there's two important properties in semantic zoom, and that is the template for zoomed in view and the template for zoomed out view. Now, here's a misconception that's worth squashing, and that is the semantic zoom does not bind to any data. The semantic zoom does not know about your data. The semantic zoom, you just hand it the two grid views or whatever it is you're going to show, and it knows how to transition between the two. That's all the semantic zoom does, right? When I started out developing Metro apps, I thought the same thing. I was like, well, this semantic zoom, I guess it's like an item source property or something. No. That's not the way it works. And I'll show you. So zoomed in, and then I'll do the same thing for zoomed out. And then I'll go ahead and do it. And the truth is, zoomed out. That really is done. And so I paste my grid view into each of those sections, and the rest is handled for me. All the animations are done, all the transitions are done, semantic zoom is just waiting for the grid views. So no extra pieces, no extra settings to the semantic zoom. Well, there's many things you could do. You could default to which one you want to go to and things like that. So let me pull the code in so you can see. And so I'm going to pull the entire semantic zoom, but I didn't add anything to it. I just don't want to get it wrong. So let me scroll to the top so you can see. So here's semantic zoom, the zoomed in view. This is that, let me just kind of back out just a little. This is the grid view that shows the hierarchical stuff. And then here is the grid view that shows the group that says, it's the 50,000 foot view, right? That says each country name and the number of cities in every country, right? So let me run this and you can see what this looks like. It's a pretty small amount of code. It really is small to implement all these different pieces. And that's because these controls are native and they already know the metro style for you and they're expecting you to implement along the metro way. And that's just the way. Okay, so here we are. Looks the way you would hope it. Anybody know what the semantic zoom mouse gesture would be? Go ahead. It's a free Xbox. Control mouse. Or it's control wheel, right? That's right. Sound like everybody gets an Xbox to me. Sound like everybody got it right. So it would be the original Xbox. We're out of 360s right now, so. It's Halo 1 Special Edition, the green one. It's going to be great. Doesn't run any of the new games, unfortunately. That's all right. We've got a lot of them left over. But you're absolutely right. So look, I can go in and out. It's beautiful, isn't it? Come on, give it to me. I wrote the semantic zoom. I was on the semantic zoom. They asked me, and I was like, well, I'll knock something out. So I didn't really. Somebody else did. But yeah, I can pinch it as well. I mean, it's just awesome. And look, I can go too big. I can go too small. Wow, it's just cool. All right, I mean, that kind of functionality just given to you. I mean, what's great is app to app, you should expect this. When you find an app that has a long list of data, like this, let's say, and you're going from side to side, and you're like, where's that one? And you pinch zoom and it doesn't do it, sucks, right? I mean, let's just be honest, right? I mean, you want an app that is awesome. Your app needs to be part of the awesome family, not part of the other family, right? I didn't mean like other, like anything to do with Michael. So, I really didn't. All right, that didn't. I mean, I'm just playing. Of course, I'm playing. I did mean that. All right, so I'm gonna. Okay, so now we're done with XAML. That's pretty cool, right? I can do a grid view. It's important to know in your mind the grid view and list view. The two major differences is one scrolls horizontally and one scrolls vertically. Right? That's probably the fundamental difference between the two. They look extremely similar. And I think it's confusing in the minds of a lot of XAML developers of which one to use. There are other reasons to choose, and there's an article on MSDN that helps you choose. It kind of walks you through the different reasons for each. But that's at the top of the decision tree. I want to jump over to C# again real quick. And I'm a Control-MO user. Anybody else use that keystroke? Control-MO? And then Control-ML, of course, is the opposite. Right? So if I were to shorten this and do control M-O. See how it collapses everything that's collapsible? To me, that's just handy, right? Control M-L is the opposite. I don't know. I mean, I thought maybe you guys would like some keystrokes. All right, so let me do control M-L so it's kind of hidden. You don't have to fiddle with it. All right, so remember I've got this model and this view model. I don't want to fiddle with that right now. I'm going to open up my class, and it only has a constructor that sets the data. Right, that's it. And so I'm going to go in, and I'm going to add a charm. So let's use the share charm. And when I use the share charm, so here's the way share charm works. The user swipes in from the right like this. They click on the share charm like this. And when they do, an event is raised by the operating system and handed off to your application. You either do or you don't handle the event. If you do handle the event, then you can handle sharing, right? If you don't, then it says nothing can be shared from whatever your application is currently running, including the desktop. All right, so let's handle that. I'll show you how to add it. I'm going to grab some code here. I am going to grab the onNavigated to. So if you're a XAML developer, you certainly know the onNavigated to override. That happens whenever anybody enters into the page for the first time, right? Either through the navigation context either by navigating through a URL or being sent there directly. And so let me just add my using. Which, by the way, that's control periods. Everybody know that one? That's a really great one. I mean, when I discovered that one, I couldn't sleep for a week. I mean, it was unbelievable. Like, here, let me kill it and show you. Because, I mean, it's that dazzling, right? So I'll go up here to this one and see it's got the little smart tag. It's, like, impossible to mouse over and get just right. And so you can mouse over and get it just right, like, if you're a fine, like, sharpshooter like I am. But let's say you're not. Let's say you're coding with just a touchscreen. No, it wouldn't, and then you can't use the keystroke. Okay, so look, control period, as long as I have my cursor on it and it pulls it up for me. And the first one is already selected, right? And so when you're doing a demo like I am, you can do something like, okay, so let's add the using. You do it like that, you're like, magical, how did it happen, right? It's awesome. Just control period and just select it, right? It's brilliant. All right, so look what I'm doing. As soon as I navigate to it, I remove any sort of data requested handler that I have, right? If there's not one, there's no error, it's just skipped. And then right after it, I add one to make sure there's only one, because I certainly don't want to handle sharing twice, because that'd be embarrassing. And so now, that's it. So now this is me saying I've registered for the share request, or the event that's raised by the operating system that indicates share. And so now all I need is my on data requested, which everybody knows you can do the control period there too, right? And it'll stub it out for you. It codes it all for you. It's like you don't even, we're all replaced by wizards someday. Wizards. All right. There's a wizard joke there, but I left it. All right, so let me go and just paste this in so you guys don't have to see it all pushed out, but let me show you what it does. So I'm going to go in, I'm going to have my list of cities, and I'll just select a whole bunch of cities so we can have some data. And then I'll take that and I'll format that into an HTML string, and I'll send that off to be the thing that I share. That's pretty easy. And so let me show you how I do it. First thing, I make sure there's something selected, otherwise I'll get a null reference. And then I create my list of everything that's selected, right? So here's my item that's selected. I turn them all into a string. I join them and separate them by an LI, right? For all you web developers out there, that's for a list item. And then, so I have it, and I'm ready to hand that off. HTML can be formatted in different applications. I'll send it off to mail so we can see it. And then I use the request itself, which is passed in as an argument to the event, or to the handler. And so I say, go get the request and start setting some stuff. Set the title of it, set the description of it, and set the HTML text as well. And so that's how I send it all down. I can send other things too, right? It doesn't have to be a string. I could send a payload of formatted JSON or XML. I could send an image. I could send a video. It's really up to me. In this case, it's going to be really simple. And it's just going to say select cities. All right, so I'm just going to run that real quick so we can see it. All right, so here's our application, which still does this awesome kind of, see that? Just, that's fun. That's the problem. It kills productivity. That's totally the problem, right? You're like, what have you been doing all day? Huh? What? All right, so let's select a handful in Germany and select a few in Austria. For the one German in the back, and then for the Finns and all their unpronounceable names, and then one London, New York. We just want a bunch of data, right? Let's go over here, poor Argentina. There we go. Australia, you can fend for yourself. I'm not messing with that. All right. Now, I can swipe in from the right, and share's there. It's ready for me to go. I'm going to say share, and when I do, if I had a breakpoint in that method, it would step through it for me, right? We don't need to do that. I mean, breakpoints are for wussies, right? We don't make mistakes. All right. So, it ran. Huh? See? No, I'm only kidding. All right. All right, so it pulls up all the ones that are ready for HTML text. And so I only have mail installed on this machine to receive that. So I can select it. I'll tell you, there's a cool thing. If I were to send this, let's say, to you, and your name is Carl, the next time I do a share, Carl, you'll be right at the top as you were the last one, right? And it saves me thinking I'm going to share a lot with you. That's pretty cool. But any application that receive HTML, like it could be Facebook or whatever I have installed. So I'll go ahead and select mail. Mail will start up, and then check it out. It'll pre-populate inside the message of my mail all the stuff that I just selected. That's pretty simple. Pretty cool. Wait, isn't that cool? Yeah. I forget to pause for the awesome. But in all reality, it is really neat, and I could format it any way I want. It was really simple to put LIs around everything, but I could have put tables and images and made it look as cool as I want to, so I could share, you know, a rich context with somebody. Mail to your friends would be the option, right? And then I can, as I type, it would go into my, remember I logged into my Windows account, or my Microsoft account, which was formerly known as my Windows Live ID, which allows me to access my contact list, and so I could type from here and access my contact list. If in my mail application I'm connected to my Exchange server, it would go through my GAL and whatever I want, and I could send that way. It's really nice because it allows my application, which knows nothing about mail, which knows nothing about my GAL, which knows nothing about Facebook to still be able to share out to those applications just by implementing what really translates in just a handful of little lines, right? It's pretty amazing. If you write an application and you don't leverage the share charm, or you don't leverage very similarly the search charms or the settings charms, shame on you, because it is so easy and so much opportunity for you to make your application awesome with such a small amount of effort, right? I mean, granted, it has to be effort that's done right, but at the same time, it's not like this ordeal of creating something from scratch. All right, one thing I do want to show, since I mentioned it there for a second, is around search. If I went into my application and I said, add new item, oh, I'm debugging, let me back out real quick. So if I said, add new item, one of the items that I could select here is the search contract. And this is how I would enable a search contract. So when I swipe from the right and I say select search, and then I go down to, let's say, Contoso Cookbook, which is what you'll be building after dinner, then that's a landing page the Contoso Cookbook had to create, right? Windows 8 doesn't have a clue on how to do that. If you don't build that for them inside your application, your own landing page for search, there's nowhere for it to land. So when I said right-click, add search, then that means, or add search contract, then that means build my landing page for how it searches. Okay, so I have to admit, applications built in JavaScript are awesome. If what you know is HTML and JavaScript, the fact that there's an on-ramp for you to be able to build a Windows application is sweetness, right? It really is. For me, I love the fact that XAML is there. I mean, I have a XAML tattoo, I'll show you later, and I totally dig XAML. I've got a VB tattoo over here too. It's just the laser work, it's really painful. And that sounded totally wrong. It's not that painful. But the reality is you can have hybrid solutions too. You can use different languages together. I can have C# projecting into a C++ application. I can have C++ language projecting into a JavaScript application. Because in the end, these WinRT projections go from language to language, and it adds a lot of power. Anyway, so there's no way I could build a full application right now. But there are so many little pieces, and I hope it makes sense that even though I was cheating with some sample data and some things that I was copying and pasting, hopefully you saw that it really is a step-by-step process, and they aren't gigantic steps, but they're baby bite-sized steps that you can easily do. After lunch, we'll come back. The labs go through all of these pieces to show you every single charm and how to implement them properly, how to do live tiles, how to do notifications, how to do background tasks. I can't encourage you enough to come back and get these labs and work through them with us. And depending on whatever language you want, for me, it's C#. But either way, build an excellent app, an excellent Metro app, and thanks for listening. Thanks, everybody.